Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. Hi there, this is Patrick Timpone, and OneRadioNetwork.com is the name of this place where we hang out. And the fellow that you see to my left or your right or whatever is Dane Wigginton. And Dane is a very fascinating fellow. He has been working on his website, his work, his research for a very long time, over 20 years, geoengineeringwatch.com. And he's executive producer for all kinds of climate engineering, the documentary, The Dimming, if you remember that, and has background in solar energy. Well, so we have a lot to talk about. He worked for Bechtel Power Corporation many years ago, licensed contractor. He lives out in California. And he's just been looking at this whole thing of weather manipulation for a very, as I say, very long time. So it's an honor to have Dane Wigginton. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
To cover the climate intervention operations, Patrick, few are aware of what's going on in our skies.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff going on there, Dane Wigginton. Well, God love you. Let's start with California, Dan. You live out there, and we're looking at, you know, Lake Mead, and now folks are selling the idea that there's going to be food shortages because of no rain out in California and Arizona. Is there any evidence that this whole Western thing that's going on is a controlled operation? Do we have evidence of that?
We do. We have satellite imagery that proves conclusively that ongoing climate intervention operations are disrupting the flow of precipitation into the U.S. West. We can speculate about the various agendas or objectives, but the fact that the primary causal factor for the lack of precipitation in the U.S. West is climate engineering is beyond dispute. That's not a denial of other factors that are affecting the climate. The human race has been incredibly poor stewards of planet Earth. We've decimated the forests, poisoned the oceans, we're paving much of the planet. We put 100 million barrels of hydrocarbon into the atmosphere every single day. Again, the acknowledgement of climate engineering is not a denial of the other factors that are affecting the climate, but we're stating that there are very direct cause and effect scenarios going on here that we can monitor with satellite imagery, and there's no question that the climate engineering, climate intervention operations are cutting off the flow of precipitation to the U.S. West.
No question in your mind, and you look at this. Just an anecdotal thing, I live out in Dripping Springs, Texas, and 15 years ago or so, we could see weather systems come in, Dane, through California, right? And it would rain out there, and then 3 or 4 days later, we'd get it here in Texas. It was just like clockwork. We'd get our 30 inches of rain. And that stopped some years ago. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so. So there are forces that want to dry out California, is what you're saying, that are causing this drought.
But there's other elements that we can see in the equation because we follow the systems. You're correct that they don't feed in from the west as they did. There's very powerful ground-based microwave transmission facilities like HARP in Alaska. Some of your listeners may have heard of HARP.
Sure.
And that's only one of perhaps 100 ground-based, large, powerful ground-based microwave transmission facilities that are used to heat the ionosphere. The transmission of these microwave signals causes an electrical chain reaction in the ionosphere, heats it to astoundingly high temperatures. That creates a bulge in the atmosphere that pushes up and down. That downward push is a high-pressure dome, and in the northern hemisphere, that dome circulates the upper-level winds clockwise around it. Hmm. In doing so, they're able to steer the upper-level wind currents. So as this high-pressure dome in the west, which meteorologists refer to as the ridiculously resilient dome of high pressure, and we know there's a correlation. We just, in fact, going into the heating that's just occurred in California, you saw the massive temperatures in Canada, British Columbia. The Federal Aviation Administration had a warning on their website for all air traffic to avoid their airspace because of the transmissions they were emitting. So, again, the degree to which they're derailing the planet's hydrological cycle is staggering, and the aerosols themselves that are dispersed from aircraft, and we know that that is the case. We've just conducted high-altitude atmospheric testing with a NOAA flying lab, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration flying lab, confirmed that heavy aircraft are emitting climate-engineering elements into our skies. We've done ground testing for 2 decades. But these aerosols, when you put too many aerosols, small suspended particles in the atmosphere, creates too many condensation nuclei, and it tends to migrate the moisture without falling. The droplets don't combine and fall. If they seed larger elements, that can cause the precipitation to rain out. But in the West, we see this aerosolization of any storm moisture, so we have these featureless skies. And if you've watched the sky, sounds like you're pretty observant, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
You used to be able to see various cloud formations of various color hues to them. Now we'll have days and days in the West with these featureless, rainless skies.
Boom.
And that's solar radiation management.
Kind of like the high pressure things we get in Texas for 2 months sometimes, right? Just nothing, but not even a blue sky, more of a white hazy thing. So, Dane, are they able to control this in different areas, like let it rain in Wisconsin and not in California? Is it that?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it really? Is that sophisticated?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, we have publications in the last week from Russia, from the United Arab Emirates, on their rain augmentation operations in Russia to try to squelch some of the wildfires in Siberia that are epic there now, that paradoxically are caused, the lack of precipitation there, also caused by climate engineering in the first place. So the notion that Russia is going to then try to put those out with the same operations is in some sense theater, because the climate engineers at this point, it appears, are utilizing the wildfire smoke to provide enough atmospheric particulate loading to provide temporary cooling for the polar regions. And that's an astounding statement. It sounds completely contradictory that a wildfire could actually provide temporary cooling. But it does. It's like it's a form of artificial volcano. The hotter the fire burns, the higher the particulates go, and the longer they stay aloft. And we actually have, if your listeners search Wildfires Serve Geoengineering Agenda, they can see a 22-minute report that shows the science study that states the, quote, benefit of wildfire smoke in the northern latitudes to provide temporary cooling. If you can imagine how insane that is, to incinerate some of the planet's last remaining life support systems to provide temporary cooling. And we see the smoke cloud from the West. I'm not sure if you've seen that, Patrick, but you know, lots of reports of the air quality over New York and other places, because the smoke cloud has migrated that far. The smoke particulates can stay aloft for perhaps up to 2 months under the right conditions. So in regard to where it rains and where it doesn't, I described earlier the high-pressure dome in the West that circulates the upper level ones clockwise. That spins all the moisture completely around the U.S. West. It dips back down to Texas most recently, where you guys have been kept pretty cool and damp off and on, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. July, we had a very wet July today.
So it picks up the moisture from the Gulf that's coming in as well. That steers up the eastern seaboard. And for the record, the eastern half of the U.S. lower 48 since 2012, for the last 9 years running, is the most anomalously less warm region on the entire planet, based on normal temperatures. That doesn't mean it's, you know, colder than the poles. Mm. It means based on what the historical norms were, it's the most anomalously less warm region on the entire planet. So it's been, they've kept the most populated portions of the U.S. cooler, and that confuses and divides the population as to the true state of planetary meltdown, and thus keeps the division, the debate going.
Interesting. Dane Wigginton is here with us, geoengineeringwatch.org. If you have a question, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We had to use the 800 number line, so you can't call in this morning. Dane's on it because we couldn't get the Skype thing enough volume, but just use the email, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Fascinating. So, in general, the exhaust things from the chemtrails, that we've seen forever. Are these then, are these aluminum kind of particles that they use to make the HAARP thing work? That's what I've heard, but is that close?
It's on track. So mm-hmm. on the whole contrail debate, if you will,
right.
what we're seeing in our skies are particulate dispersions, not condensation. We can say this definitively.
Sure.
We have up-close film footage of the nozzles mounted on aircraft with spray dispersions being turned on and off. That's the end of the argument. It's not condensation.
Sure.
The film footage proves that. We try to stick, what I would recommend to your listeners, if they're trying to introduce this issue to others, to stick to the science terms, geoengineering, climate engineering, solar radiation management, because if people go to search those terms, they'll find science. The chemtrails terms has been used, although it's descriptive and okay for personal conversations, it's been used as the instant marginalization term, whether it's
yes, sir.
Elected officials or media. So
sure.
if they stick to the science terms, they'll have gain more traction.
Yes,
they
sir. Try to sell them. So, a tinfoil hat and conspiracy theory and that kind of thing, right? They use that.
Yeah, which think how ridiculous that is. I mean, most people know of weather modification programs, the small little single engine Cessna with a few flares in the wings, and people accept that that can modify the weather, but the military tanker like a KC-135 that can carry 100 tons of payload material to dump into our skies, they have been trained to write that off as being something the government would never do, as if the government would ask for permission to do anything.
Right. And what are they spraying out of the rear ends of these things?
Our tests reveal what we see on climate engineering patents, elements like aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers. These are all highly toxic elements, and when you combine these elements with other elements that we know we have in our air column, like mercury, the toxicity increases exponentially. In the case of aluminum and mercury, when those elements are combined, and we all have both in us now, the overall toxicity increases by as much as 10,000%. That's 100 times worse by combining those metals. So,
wow.
Highly toxic.
Highly toxic. And we've talked to the aluminum guy from Europe. His name is escaping me at the moment. You probably know who he is, but he's probably the biggest expert on aluminum. And it's very, very, I think it's definitely got caused into a dementia and Alzheimer's.
Aluminum. You talked to Exley?
Exley.
He just got let go of the...
Wow.
All his research has just been canceled. They just canceled all of Exley's work, which is the university. It's...
Wow.
I can't think of the name of the university. His whole team, they've just dumped all their research, canceled all their ongoing research. This is just one of the ways those in power...
They do it, boy, don't they?
Yeah. That they try to cover their tracks, and that just happened.
Really, just like this week, or just recently?
In the last week, yeah.
I'll be. We have to contact him. Maybe he'll come on and talk about that. Oh man, yeah, aluminum's tough too. To get out of. But
what's also with the on the subject of aluminum, and for someone like Exley, he is certainly not at liberty to discuss. The source of aluminum from our skies. I mean, that would be an
instant
boot over his neck if he tried that. But, again, lab tests from around the globe prove this. We've done 70 lab tests in Northern California alone of precipitation to test for these particles, aluminum in every single test, staggering amounts at times. And these are aluminum nanoparticulates, as our atmospheric testing just proved. The smaller the particle, the more harmful it is. And when inhaled aluminum is far more devastating to our systems than ingested aluminum, because inhaled aluminum goes to the olfactory nerve as we breathe that through our nose, goes into our bloodstream, can cross the blood-brain barrier, and there's no question it's there. I mean, we're not speculating, and it's very bioavailable in that form and very bioaccumulative. It's very easily absorbed and almost impossible to purge from our systems.
We had a little technical thing at the beginning, so we had some trouble with the audio. But we're talking to Dane Wigginton, geoengineering.org. It is 23 minutes after 10. So
actually, if I stop you there, because if they search geoengineering.org, that's a pro-geoengineering website.
Okay, Geoengineering Watch, sorry.
Geoengineeringwatch.org, yeah.
Geoengineeringwatch.org. So sorry about the problem with the audio at the beginning, but we're going to cover it all. So What we have been talking about before, I just realized we had a little audio issue, is that there are particles coming out of these the rear end of these jets, and it's called what's the common term? Even use the term chemtrails any longer, or what do you like to use?
We never use the term ever on any broadcast, but you can label it climate engineering, geoengineering, solar radiation management, acronym SRM on that, stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. Those are the science terms, but climate engineering suffices to get people on the right track, or geoengineering.
Okay, so earlier you mentioned that Russia was doing this and some countries. Do you have any knowledge of if this people that are doing the geoengineering, the climate engineering, Dane Wigginton, are they in concert, or are they fighting one another to try to get rain over here, and no, we want to do rain over here? Do you know?
Well, that's a very important question.
Mm-hmm.
We know from Senate documents and governmental documents, we have, in fact, one Senate document we located 800 pages long, that goes as far back as the late 70s, that calls for international cooperation between countries that have otherwise opposing interests, that they will work together on the climate engineering operations because of the cross-border ramifications. You can't just climate engineer over your own country without affecting the rest of the world. So that cooperation is certainly there, and in spite of opposing interests. Now, in regard to your question, within that context, can there be a form of covert weather warfare occurring? And certainly the answer is yes. And we see, for example, on the use of weather warfare, after 9/11, Patrick, you may have seen that General Wesley Clark, the former NATO Supreme Commander, was given a list of countries, target countries in the Middle East, and a list that certainly existed before 9/11 occurred. Subsequently, every one of those countries underwent a once-in-1,000-year drought. Their precipitation was cut off. That destabilized food supplies, that destabilized populations, made those countries easier to occupy. And we have the leaders of those countries, in the case of Iran, for example, on the floor of the UN, stating that NATO was cutting off their precipitation.
Wow.
They have sophisticated weather monitoring equipment. They know what's going on in airspace upstream from them. There's no question this is going on. It's a crown jewel weapon of the military-industrial complex. They can bring populations to their knees without those populations ever even knowing they're under assault. And again, this is occurring in the U.S. West. Crops are failing here, absolutely failing.
And in the West, yeah. And to stick with Iran in that area for a minute before we go to the West, Dane, is that I've been seeing more articles about water being the big issue in Iraq and Iran, right? And they're going to start to fight over water, never mind oil.
Exactly. And it's important for your listeners to understand this. You have to have more overall precipitation on a warming planet based on the laws of physics. The atmosphere holds 7% more moisture for every degree C of warming. So we should be looking at exponentially more precipitation right now, because ground-based data that's not being censored indicates we are past 3.5 degrees C of warming right now. The only way you can have less overall precipitation, I know there's deluges, many in the east, we just had Germany just got slaughtered, China just got slaughtered, I mean, all this precipitation wads up and comes down in a deluge in certain other regions, and they may be augmenting that as well. But overall, there is more overall drought now on planet Earth, and the laws of physics say that can't happen unless there's a factor we're not being told about, and that factor is climate engineering, which thwarts evaporation, especially over the oceans. There's an extreme level of aerosol operations over the oceans. These are light-blocking particulates. That's the stated purpose of solar radiation management. You block direct sunlight, you thwart evaporation. You affect convection, which affects wind, reducing it overall over the oceans, which in turn affects precipitation again, evaporation and precipitation. So there's no question this is the elephant in the room, the elephant in the sky, if you will, and the governments are not going to admit to this, of course, for obvious reasons. It means every single weather event would then become, weather disaster would then become a potential liability.
Yes, sir. So this idea of, first it was man-made global warming, then it was global warming, now they call it climate change. Or did I hear you say that you believe that the Earth overall is warming some, but then can we then conjecture that it's not because of coal-fired plants, but it's because of geoengineering?
Science would not back that conclusion.
It would not.
anything that affects the energy balance of the planet is a problem. And the atmosphere doesn't know the difference between a particulate from a coal-fired power plant or the back of a geoengineering jet aircraft. All of it is a part of the problem. Again, anything that affects the energy balance of the planet. But climate engineering operations have derailed the planet's attempt to respond to the heating, to the damage done. So in the case of the U.S. West, we've had, in Earth's past epochs, we've had eras that were a substantially higher carbon count, although what's happening now is happening hundreds of times faster than any period in Earth's previous epochs. But did we have a incinerating, burning to the ground west 5.2 million years ago during the Pliocene epoch when the carbon counts were higher? No, we had a very lush, rainy western North America because, again, the hydrological cycle picks up as that heating occurs. That's not happening now. The reason it's not happening is because climate engineering operations, again, are cutting off precipitation. They're toxifying soils. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
These elements are highly toxic to root systems and soil microbiome. So it's killing the soil microbiome. It's causing root systems to shut down in the forest so they stop nutrient uptake, and there's far less water again overall. It's destroying the ozone layer, so we're being bombarded right now with UVC on the surface. That's the last spectrum of UV radiation before X-ray. The ozone layer is disintegrating, and if we looked at that alone, and climate engineering is the single greatest causal factor with ozone destruction, not the only factor, I want to stress that. Again, we've been very poor stewards of the planet, but if we had only that factor, and that's only one of many factors, but if we only faced that threat, if the disintegrating ozone layer, based on the current readings from a we have a former NASA contract engineer that works directly for us on the current rate of ozone loss and thus increased surface UV radiation, we face potential total ozone layer collapse about mid-decade, this decade. It's
and
already.
What would that mean if the ozone just collapsed, Dane?
It means game over. It means you cannot grow anything. You can hide in your house as long as you have some food in the cupboard, but it means the end of terrestrial insect life, aquatic organisms like plankton. You can't grow anything on the surface. It's game over at that point. And we are perilously close to that point. It's frying crops here right now. In Northern California, the Cambrian layer on trees, for example, the bark, which is the living part of the tree, it's completely fried off trees all over. Not all trees, but many trees, depending on the species and the exposure. The Cambrian layer is completely fried down to the core wood from tip to trunk. It's wreaking havoc on crops. The temperatures here are also staggeringly high. I mean, in the forests of Northern California, we've seen so far this year, we've seen temperatures as high as 92, 93 degrees at midnight. At midnight.
Up northwest, up there, we've been seeing some of the stories, right?
121 in British Columbia, 121 degrees in the cold, wet, damp, generally British Columbia, 121.3 degrees just set. Yeah.
Dane Wigginton is with us, geoengineeringwatch.com. If you have a question for him, he's on our 800 number, so just do email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So let me see, though. Let me go back to this, and I'd like to get clear on it, Dane. If there was nobody messing around and all we were doing was putting more carbon through whatever, automobiles or coal-fired plants or whatever, you know, the carbon that the global warming people, are you saying, did I hear you say that the Earth could balance that out fairly well?
No.
No?
I don't want to give that impression. First, let me say a couple things. First,
okay.
We have, at geoengineeringwatch.org, we feel great disdain toward all the so-called environmental groups. All of them are completely ignoring the climate engineering issue because they don't want to lose their 501c3 nonprofit status. They won't address the single most environmentally destructive human activity of all. And we find that to be unimaginably hypocritical. We know this to be the case because our attorneys have spoken to their attorneys. They will not address this issue. They don't want to risk their 501c3 nonprofit. So we have no love for the environmental groups, none of them.
Yes, sir.
Now,
and what is that single most? This is what you're talking about, climate engineering.
They will not address the issue.
They will not address the issue.
Will not acknowledge it because they don't want to lose their nonprofit status. So in regard to the changes, the Earth changes that are occurring right now, mathematically, statistically, although carbon counts, yes, have been significantly higher in past epochs, those changes took place over periods of time that were hundreds of times longer than what is occurring now. What's occurring now is occurring hundreds of times faster than any previous period in Earth's history. That makes it impossible for any organism to adapt that fast enough to deal with that. Now, that being said, we would still be in much better shape overall had they never started climate engineering operations over 75 years ago, immediately after World War II. We have, again, hamstrung the planet's ability to try to respond
to, balance
to the damage done. Yeah. Exactly. And again, not to mention toxifying every single breath we take. And if I can, you know, you can pursue this if you wish or not, I just want to make mention of this, that there's no question these particles are in the air column. Our lab testing from all over the world proves this. Our atmospheric testing proves it. These particles, at minimum, make us all far more susceptible to any pathogen because of the inflammation it causes to our respiratory systems. In addition to being toxic overall, causes immense inflammation. We have the world's second most recognized geoengineer, i.e. climate engineer, Dr. Ken Caldera. We have an audio of him stating what he did for the U.S. Department of Defense was to design ways of spraying pathogens into clouds to infect the populations below. We have the audio of him stating that in his own words. Now, Mr. Caldera works directly for Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. We find that profoundly interesting. Bill Gates calls him his most amazing teacher. And to add one more piece to this puzzle, I'm only giving pieces of data. Your listeners can conclude what they wish to or not from that. But we have Italian researchers that have just confirmed with peer-reviewed study that CV19 has been found attached to airborne particulates.
Which 19? What is it?
COVID-19.
What? Some kind of particle or whatever it is?
COVID-19, you know what that is?
Yeah, but I don't think it exists as they claim, but go ahead.
Well, you know, again, I'm only stating that whatever the element is, Italian researchers have found that the CV19 element has been found attached to airborne particulates, but even if you want to back that out of the equation, we have the world's second most recognized climate engineer who stated what he did for the U.S. DOD was to design ways of spraying pathogens into clouds to affect populations. He works for Bill Gates now. We find that very interesting.
Yes.
When we look at the wave of countries infected, 85 and over the course of 3 days when this all started, that's incredibly uniform dispersion. We find that of interest as well. So, again, let's ask this question. Would our government do biological experimentation on innocent U.S. civilians without their knowledge or consent?
History has proven yes.
Absolutely yes. As of 1977, mm-hmm. there were 239 confirmations.
Sure.
That's Washington Post even covered this. Your listeners can look it up. 239 instances of the U.S. government conducting open-air biological testing over U.S. civilians without their knowledge or consent. 239 as of 1977. How many have occurred since?
Wow, 239. And Dane Wigginton, you said that this whole geoengineering thing started as long ago than as far as 75 years ago. They had the chops to do that technology wise. Like, one can only imagine what they have now at their disposal.
Exactly, and people, Patrick, you've probably seen people refer to the large trails being emitted by the World War II bombers as proof this is all just condensation. You've probably heard that argument before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we found on the U.S. military archives, and this film footage is in the Dimming documentary, which is on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org. Listeners can view that for free. We asked them to help overcome social media censorship because we have been censored on that film. If they share the link from the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org through email, they can still share this film. We have film footage of World War II bombers, footage taken from one bomber of other bombers surrounding it, shutting their dispersion off instantly as if it was cut with a knife in flight. That is confirmation that they were beta testing them. That was not condensation. You can't kill all four engines at once mid-flight and keep flying. So there's no question they were beta testing then, and the deployment after World War II is reflected in temperature records. They worked on the poles initially. The climate engineering operations appear to have focused on the polar regions initially, and it had a profound effect initially, at least statistically, because the negative effects had not yet manifested, i.e. ozone layer destruction, dying forests. So, again, why would we think that they wouldn't do this? Did they ask our permission to detonate over 2,000 nuclear bombs that's contaminated every living organism on the planet? Of course they didn't ask our permission.
Of course not. No.
So, of course, they're not going to ask our permission on engineering the climate either. And, again, we have Senate documents 800 pages long confirming the scope and scale of these programs going back decades. There's no speculation involved.
Dane Wigginton is with us. It is geoengineeringwatch.com. My name is Patrick Timpone. Again, 800 number is being used up, so you want to do the email if you'd like to ask a question. Boy, this is so fascinating. I'm so glad to finally talk to you because it's been many years. So I guess it's not a stretch. I don't know how far we want to go with this geopolitically or, I don't know, philosophically, but that this idea that's being talked about more and more, food prices, as you know, some people are selling the idea they're going to go up 20% this fall. And so the breadbasket in California and the parts of Arizona, that it's possible that there are people that really are engineering food shortages. I mean, that's not a stretch, is it?
Not at all. But let me carry that further.
Okay.
Let me try to point out the gravity and immediacy of our collective reality. And again, I'm focused on this issue because it is a near-term existential threat. I'm not an activist. I'm not politically oriented in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I would argue that it's just simply mass distraction from all sides of the fence. But statistically, where we're at right now, and geoengineeringwatch.org is non-political. We've lost 70% of Earth's wildlife populations in the last 40 years.
70%? Really? Of just the furries and the creepy and the animals?
70%.
That's crazy.
If we get to aquatic life, we've now lost over 90% of pelagic fish populations, the food fish in the oceans, over 90%.
Oh, come on, that's not possible, is it?
I would challenge any of your listeners to research everything I'm stating.
Global, isn't that right?
Global bluefin tuna populations down 98%. So let's look at insect populations. And many people already intuitively know if we lose the insects, we're not going to be far behind. Geoengineeringwatch.org was the first major source to publish that we had seen insect populations decline 80 to 90% in the case of terrestrial insects. The climate science, or the science community, rather, tried to marginalize that conclusion. Now they have admitted to it and acknowledged it. I challenge your listeners to search insect apocalypse and see how many science articles they find on that subject. We've lost 80 to 90% of Earth's aquatic and terrestrial insect life. We're not going to be far behind. If the insects can't make it, we're not going to make it.
So is this the idea of the wasps and the bees and the pollinators that they've lost a lot?
We have no pollinators in Northern California. You have to hand pollinate where I live.
Is that right?
There's nothing here. Nothing. I mean, you literally have to hand pollinate if you can get anything to grow in the first place, because the UV is decimating the plant life in every form. I mean, it's when you reach... Well, first, for your listeners, so they know a few stats. Photosynthesis stops at 104 degrees. When you have temperatures in the forests of Northern California of 114 or 15 degrees, nothing grows. The forest doesn't smell like a forest anymore, what's left of it, because the UV is so intense, the temperatures are so high, and the lack of humidity, which creates another problem called vapor pressure deficit, which means the atmosphere is not holding as much moisture as it should. There's not as much moisture as present as should be. So the organisms, like trees, shut their respiratory ports. They do not breathe. They don't uptake carbon. They don't release oxygen. No smell in the forest at all, other than decay, if you will. Crops are failing everywhere. They're tearing crops out in California orchards. They're tearing them out with heavy equipment because they're dead.
They're
tearing orchards out with heavy equipment.
Just dead.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Man. So, again, what's coming is here. You can't just turn it off now. And every single day they continue climate engineering diminishes what chance we have left to salvage something. And again, I'm not negating all the other forms of human damage to the planet. I'm not. It's important we get the environmental groups to understand that, you know, we're not denying that at all. But we're saying, this is the biggest single hole in the bottom of the boat. We don't deal with this, nothing else matters.
Wow. Stay right there, Dan. Let's do it. Can I do a couple commercials, sir? You stay right there.
Yeah, I can. I'm good till about 9. Yeah.
Till
that's 9 Pacific. That would be 11 your time.
Oh, you only got 15 more minutes.
About 15 plus as well. I'm sorry, we didn't confirm how long we were on for, so I apologize. I had a pretty tight schedule locked in today.
Okay, well, I don't want to do a commercial then. We'll just bypass those because I don't want to waste take up your time if we only have 15 more minutes. I have so many questions. So, you use the term they. After all your research, do we know who they are?
That's another great question.
I know.
All roads lead to those who print the money.
Yes, sir.
They own militaries, thus they own countries. And especially in the case of the dollars being the global reserve currency, they've been able to print whatever they want for whatever they want. So when we have, for example, the Pentagon that's missing, based on some of the most credible estimates available, over $30 trillion. Where did that money come from in the first place?
The Fed created it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And how do you just come up missing for that? That's all black ops money. So, again, we face a cancer of criminality and corruption that is mind-numbing. And I would argue at this point, Americans need to consider this, that they are a rapidly increasing liability to those in power, not just expendable, but a liability. America's the most armed population on the planet.
Yes, sir.
And the most potentially counterbalancing force to the insanity, but they don't seem to want to wake up, not to what's happening in their skies, which is shockingly obvious for anyone who take the time to look up and open their eyes, or to the whole CV-19 scenario, which certainly, when we have, when we look at the push for the agendas behind that, it's not hard to connect those dots, that there are agendas being carried out, and all of this is intertwined, all of it's interwoven, and same source, the back to the they who print the money ultimately at the top of all this, and they do control the narrative all the way down the line. I know you know that.
The media, every bit one, Dan, right?
Everyone, exactly. And also they control governmental agencies. I've had personal meetings with Governor Newsom in the Capitol with his top aide presenting data on the climate engineering issue, which is incinerating the state which he governs. They did not dispute the data, but will not say anything, will not acknowledge it, because the state's getting upwards of $100 billion in backdoor funding from the same they, the money printers, to keep the state afloat every year, and they simply all toe the line as the ship goes down.
Wow. So I would assume then, in this country and other countries, the military, Dane Wigginton, have to be involved at some level. It's their aircraft, or do you know?
They're completely involved. We have film footage of military tankers, massive dispersions all over the globe. What's important to state, and this is where we need our military brothers and sisters to wake up, because without them we have no chance.
Yes.
They're being told they're involved with some planetary saving endeavor, which couldn't be further from the truth. So, again, was the pilot in Vietnam spraying Agent Orange told that you're going to kill innocent civilians and you're going to kill your own military comrade on the ground? He wasn't told that.
No, of course not.
Of course not. So, bottom line, what we need to do is wake up our military brothers and sisters to what they're involved with, what it's doing. It's sealing their fate, their future as well, and they need to stand down. They need to stop cooperating. We need a science community. This is important. There's a federal gag order right now, Patrick, an illegal federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees, the nation's weathermen, an illegal federal gag order.
They can't talk about this stuff.
Think about that. Obviously, there's a massive elephant in the room here, so we need them to band together and stand up and tell the truth while there's still something left to salvage. This is, mathematically and statistically speaking, what's happening in our skies, which is much more than climate engineering. That's far too dignified a term. But if we look at the total ramifications from the air we breathe, the toxification of soils, waters, destruction of the ozone layer, decimation of the hydrological cycle, fueling massive epic forest burn downs, if we look at this in totality, it's the greatest and most immediate threat we collectively face, short of nuclear cataclysm. And let's weave that into the issue. The destroyed ozone layer, which I already talked about, leaves us much more susceptible to a CME, coronal mass ejection, i.e. solar flare. Now, if we have a massive solar flare, we're much more likely to have grid shutdowns, electrical grid shutdowns all over the globe. Now we have 440 global nuclear power plants that can't cool themselves. Now we have Fukushima times several hundred or more. Game over. So even then, climate engineering is connected to the equation.
Here's an interesting question from Seeley. She says, would you ask your guests that if we just somehow managed to go to solar, electric cars, and all of that, would that solve a lot of the problems?
Absolutely not. And that's my background. I work for Bechtel.
I know you did.
My home, again, on the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine, at best, current so-called renewable energy is a hydrocarbon fuel extender, at best. I would encourage the listener to watch a film called Planet of the Humans. That's a documentary film about the fallacy of renewable energy. Again, it's better than straight hydrocarbon burning, no question, but it takes an immense amount of hydrocarbon to build a 450-foot-tall wind turbine tower, the blades of which there is no recycling. They go into landfill. That turbine has about a 15-year life at best. It's all designed to make people think we can just switch to renewable energy and live happily ever after. Couldn't be further from the truth.
Not going to happen. And people are arguing that even if you did, there's just no way there'd be enough renewable solar wind to power everything. Is that true?
Well, let's look at climate engineering, okay? The entire stated purpose of climate engineering, to block the sun. That's
right.
The stated purpose of solar radiation management, to slow down the warming of the planet by blocking some of the sun's incoming thermal energy, but it also traps more heat than it deflects. It disrupts the hydrological cycle, which disrupts rain, which now we have no hydropower in the West. From Hoover Dam to Shasta Dam, hydropower is about to be shut off.
Right. Yeah. Like Mead, right?
And back to the wind, your question.
Yeah.
When you alter convection with this reflective layer of particulates, you alter and reduce overall wind flow. So geoengineering, climate engineering, is hugely detrimental to all three forms of alternative energy, wind, hydro, and solar. Blocks the sun, reduces wind overall, and reduces overall global precipitation, although we realize in many areas deluge is occurring because this atmosphere that's trying to hold more moisture comes down in a deluge in certain regions, and they are likely augmenting that in certain regions at this point because we're at the precipice where the planet can no longer support the population because of its collapsing life support systems. Those in power know it, and at this point, weather warfare is a primary method that they can mire populations in difficulties which prohibit them from being able to even look at the wider horizon, let alone do anything about it.
And then if you have people fighting over water and other resources, it's just another, you know, I don't want to get too dark here, but it's just another methodology to get involved in some war, right? More weapons.
Absolutely.
Well, military-industrial complex. Oh, we'll support you. You know, we'll give you, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Dane Wigginton is here. He only has a few more minutes before we have to let him go. So, what could possibly be an end goal for these people? Aren't they going to get... They're living here, too. I mean, how are they going to survive?
Okay, another great question, core question. First, let me point this out. Mm-hmm. What we're dealing with is very comparable to a cancer. Does a cancer intend to kill its host? No. A cancer intends to proliferate. The consequences are not considered, and we're dealing with exactly that mentality.
Uh-huh.
It's a headless, heartless, soulless beast. Again, why would they detonate over 2,000 nuclear bombs? Why would they have enough nuclear weaponry to destroy humanity about 8,000 times over mathematically? But further, to weave this into the wider horizon, looking through their lens, we have mass methane expulsion occurring right now. Bermuda Triangle, Patrick, the ship sinkings, that's methane released from the C4. That's scientific conclusion that is not disputed at this point. You have, as the oceans warm, in the case of Bermuda Triangle, you have methane deposits on the seafloor that release in their entirety. A whole fields tend to go at once. That aerates the water like a bottle of champagne. Ships have no buoyancy, they go to the bottom intact. So this has been happening for many, many decades. When that methane hits the sea surface, it migrates into the atmosphere and begins to cover the planet like a layer of glass. Methane over a 10-year time horizon is from 100 to 120 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. That is not being acknowledged by the science community. And they blame cow flatulence. You've heard that. I mean, that's as if that's the source of all the methane. That is not the core part of the problem. They use that example to make people angry. You can't have your hamburger anymore. When the actual methane problem is far bigger on a far larger scale. So now we have methane blowing out of the polar regions. If your listeners search Arctic methane craters, I would encourage them to search that. Actually, Siberian. Have them search Siberian methane craters. Look at the pictures, and I assure you they will be shocked that they haven't seen this on media before. Massive circular blowouts, hundreds of feet wide, hundreds of feet deep. You have to see the pictures to believe it. That's methane exploding into the atmosphere. Climate engineering, in the attempt to mask this issue, to hide it from populations, to keep business as usual for as long as possible, has actually further fueled the overall problem. Not surprisingly, just like the pharmaceutical cure, Patrick, how many commercials do you see? The latest pharmaceutical, take this for this particular symptom, and by the way, here's a list of side effects. It's so horrific. Same mentality, same exact mentality. In addition to being used as whether as a weapon and the effects on us, even physically, cognitively, these metals are highly detrimental to our cognitive function. A population that's sick and not thinking clearly is much easier to deal with as well. There are many, many layers to this.
Sure. And it all plays into this whole COVID thing, whatever it was, to control people, right? And
it certainly
does.
You know,
and do all of this stuff. Do you, if you were the king and the energy czar and you really had some power and people were going to listen to you, what kind of energy sources would you be working towards to make the whole thing work? Say, if you could stop all of the geoengineering, what would you do?
You know, unfortunately, we've painted ourselves into a very, very dark corner, and that, you know, the only way forward, if anyone's going to get through what's coming, and I don't mean centuries down the road or decades, it's here, is to cease all forms of destructive human activity to the planet, allow the planet to respond, allow the remaining life support systems to try to
come back,
find an equilibrium. Even in production of solar panels, for example, you have elements used like hexafluorethane. That element is 17,000 times more potent a greenhouse gas. Sounds like I'm pulling these figures out of the air. I'm not.
Wow.
17,000 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2, and that's, quote, green energy? No. And again, people look at CO2, you know, you hear the gas of life is necessary for, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Water's necessary too, right? But if you're 10 feet underwater, you're not going to live long. You're not adapted to that. And these changes, the escalation in CO2 at this pace, nothing can adapt. We have these other greenhouse gases, again, methane, nitrous oxide, all adding to the equation. And we have an atmosphere that's horribly polluted, and we have a damaged atmosphere now. Again, starting with the ozone layer. And then the intensity of that sun is not hard to feel. And even in Texas, if you get a good, clear day, you're going to feel the same thing on the surface of your car. Very penetrating UV radiation, again, killing plankton, killing insects. No ozone layer, game over. The walls are closing in from every direction. If there's one thing we can do at this point to unite populations around the globe in a common cause, if we can expose what's happening in our skies and expose the populations that they have been made a part of a grand and lethal experiment without their knowledge or their consent, we have a chance of uniting those populations again in a common cause. One would hope they would find their proverbial pitchforks and torches and seek out anyone involved with these programs and those involved in hiding them, because we have criminal cover-up going on with all media sources.
And everything,
media.
Right.
So,
Dane, we've had people on the show that are arguing about the whole solar minimum, that we could be going into more of a mini ice age than warm. I mean, if that would happen, would that save us, help us?
That argument is so completely baseless, and it's
really
actually exactly what the climate engineers want. Let's take the big cool down in Texas that many jumped up and down and said, look, that's proof of that, right?
Oh, you mean this 3 or 4 months ago, yeah?
Correct. So let's look at that cool down, which is 100% engineered top to bottom. We have what's called chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. They seed cloud moisture with endothermic reacting elements. We have the patents for those elements. It causes a cold, dense layer of air to descend to the surface and creates exactly the scenario you saw in Texas, completely engineered from top to bottom. Your listeners should search the engineering winter section on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org. So let's look at the Texas event. While it was 0 degrees in Dallas, it was 85 degrees at the same latitude in Florida. It was 33 degrees warmer at the North Pole at the same time. That was a completely engineered event. Again, we can speculate as to the agendas, the objectives.
And the who's, right? But you say it was engineered.
absolutely top to bottom. Let's look at other. That is a major part of climate engineering that no one wants to acknowledge. Chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. We have other instances, for example, Amarillo, Texas, May 1st, 2013. I know this data inside out, upside down. May 1st, 2013, Amarillo, Texas, all-time record high in the ground, 100 degrees in the ground. It snowed the next day. That is not nature. We had Denver, Colorado, again this year, all-time record high in the 80s, down to 12 degrees in less than 24 hours. Denver works ideally well for these sensationalized headlines to cause exactly the type of narrative you just mentioned, because Denver's in a basin. This cold, dense air, the dense air sits in that basin, just like a freezer in the market that's open top, that the cold air sits in there. It's heavier. It's more dense. So they use these type of headlines to create that kind of narrative. And let's look at the solar minimums. Let's look at the Maunder minimum, which is a major solar minimum.
Yeah.
That was a 0.25% reduction in solar radiance, 1/400th. It's virtually meaningless against the backdrop of all these other factors we've already discussed. It's so, again, people throw something like this out that's exactly what the climate engineers want. It paints the picture that these cool downs are somehow natural. Remember, Patrick, all the sensationalized headlines about all the Boston record snow in 2014?
Yes,
remember
sure,
that?
Sure, of course.
What didn't you see? What didn't you see anything about on the media? This is an indicator of what they want you to think and believe. You didn't see that, okay, it's snowing at Boston at sea level, 14,000 feet up in the Sierra is in the middle of winter at the same time. Nothing. No snow. Far above freezing temperatures. Didn't see a word about it.
Wow.
Nothing. So, and what we see in temperature recording, and I'm no fan of Al Gore, I'm no fan of the environmental groups, they're all, the hypocrisy is beyond belief. What we see is an extraordinary underreporting of official high temperatures. Not over, but under.
Wow. And Manny wants to know about... What does your guest think about nuclear energy? Is this an option for us?
It's a horrific option.
Is it?
And so let's look at Fukushima. We have a single facility that may be an extinction level event by itself if other factors don't do the job first. And I would argue that's the path we're on. Other factors will do the job first. So in Fukushima, we have a multiple meltdown scenario. No technology to fix it, no end in sight. People think that Chernobyl's done. Chernobyl's not done. Chernobyl's about to resurface as the sarcophagus is disintegrating from the ongoing nuclear meltdown exposure. And we have 440 more plants, and this goes back to why would they do this to themselves. This is a perfect example of what, quote, they do to themselves. We have 440 nuke plants right now. We're building 60 more, and one single facility by itself could be an extinction-level event.
If it just blows off the top. Well, Dan,
even the ongoing nuclear volcano that it is, I mean, it's constantly, I mean, people think Fukushima's done. That's not even remotely true. So, no, that's not a cure. I wish it was. It's not. But we're going to hit the wall in many ways very soon. But I would argue, Patrick, as dim as that is, if we can stand together, expose this issue, we would expose many other things with it. We can allow the planet to respond. We would at least buy time. That's worth fighting for.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do for a living, right? This is how you do your work.
That's not how I make my living. I spent my entire retirement on this battle because I'm not going to need it. But it's my mission in life, if you will.
Well, thanks for being here. I know you have to run because we only had about an hour and we got started late. But thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. So you stay tough. And
thank you, Patrick.
We'll keep in touch.
Thank you very much.
Dane Wigginton, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, we should just all go out and have a party. What a trip, huh? Well, what do you think? Geoengineeringwatch.org. You can go there, and I'd like to read that or go to see that Planet of the Humans, that video. Also, his video is called Dimming, which is not a video, but a documentary, Dimming. And so that might be fun to watch, too. It's hard for me to... go deep into the dark side and all of that as much as Dane is, but he's got the numbers, because so I'm just a total optimist that I know that we're going to figure something out spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and not all kill ourselves. I know that. I can't prove that, but I believe that to be true. So that's just the way I'm feeling. But I, you know, he's doing great work, and we do what we can here. So we're going to have a short show today because, well, we are. It was my error. I should have made arrangements for Dane to be on longer. I assumed he could be on an hour or two, but not the case. So we'll see you tomorrow. I'll have a short day here. I got lots to do. I hope you do. And get it done. Tomorrow, we're going to talk with a gentleman, Dr. Barnard, who is very much into using food and diet and natural things to balance out your little hormones. So ladies, listen up, especially the ladies, because they have more hormone challenges than us guys. And then also Richard Mayberry will be here tomorrow. And then on Thursday, Dr. Jane Ruby, and she's a fireball, and she's cool, and she's well worth listening to. So she's going to be here on Thursday at 10 o'clock. Adam Bergstrom, the first Monday of the month, will be here next Monday, and we have a lot of cool things coming up. So I appreciate your ongoing support. Thank you. Thanks for being here. I love you all very much. You're doing great. Let me know if we can help, and just know that we have the resources spiritually to work everything out. And I'm not just saying that to help you feel better, but we do. I mean, I just know it. I can't prove it, but I know it. So that's all I need. But we're going to figure this thing out, planet Earth, and how it all works, and not kill ourselves and our kids. We're not just not going to do it, because we're going into a golden age, and we're doing it. So hang out here, and we'll help you not get crazy. I love you all very much. Thank you. May the blessings be, and we'll see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.